Beattie Confredos, and welcome again to the Ask Beattie Show. And isn't it the truth? It is not just celebrities that have issues. We all, including therapists, including all of us, we go through so many ups and downs in our lives. And you know what I tell you every single week is that the very, very best thing that we can all do when we find ourselves on a never-ending roller coaster ride or merry-go-round ride and not fun rides is that we need to give ourselves permission and reach out and ask for help. And actually, just before the show, I was talking to one of the webmasters here at the Progressive Radio Network, and I was telling him about my frustration that I am not a computer person and I am not a social media person. And I think for the last couple of months and perhaps even longer, I was thinking that somehow I could be someone that I really am not. And I was spending a lot of time at the computer, absolutely getting nowhere. And today I felt so free. I really, really did. Just reaching out and asking for help. And there's so many people in the world and in the country who are suffering from clinical depression. 350 million people worldwide are suffering from depression at different times in their lives. 16 million adults in the United States. I mean, that translates into 1 in 5 Americans. And what about anxiety disorders? We're living in a really, really anxious time in this country. 40 million adults, and those numbers I think are probably kind of low, who have been diagnosed and who are suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. So again, we don't need to navigate this life on our own. I mean, when it comes to asking for help for computers, or we need to find out about real estate, or we need to maybe learn something about the market, we really are not hesitant. You know, we're on the computer and we're wanting to find out information about all kinds of things. In fact, again, before the show, I needed to order a pair of new headphones. So here I was on the computer looking to find out some really good information. Of course, I then asked my producer, Jesse, what was the best headphones that I should buy. But the point of the matter is, my friends, is that life is stressful on so many different levels. I mean, for example, depression. I mean, there's so many people who are suffering from depression on a daily basis, where they're experiencing depressed mood most of the day, nearly every day, markedly diminished interest or pleasure in all or almost all activities most of the day, nearly every day. It is a tough way to go about living your life. Or what about significant weight loss or weight gain when you're not trying to diet? Or insomnia or hypersomnia nearly every day. You're either not sleeping. Your mind is thinking about all kinds of different things. Or on the other hand, you do not want to get out of bed. You're feeling so down. You're feeling so low. You're feeling so depressed. And what about fatigue or loss of energy nearly every day? And you've gone to the doctor and there's nothing wrong with you physically, and yet you know that inside there is this heaviness. You are feeling low. You are feeling depressed, and you can't seem to be able to break out of the cycle. Or what about you're walking around and you just feel worthless? I hear this in my practice from people all the time. I feel like a failure. I don't feel that I'm accomplishing anything, not in my relationships, not in my work. Or perhaps you're walking around and you've walked around for years just feeling so guilty, inappropriate guilt, and you just can't seem to be able to get a handle on any of this. Or you're not able to think and you're not able to concentrate. In fact, some people that I've seen initially who, you know, call me for therapy, have had all kinds of recurrent thoughts of death, suicidal ideation or suicidal thoughts, or people who've actually had a plan to kill themselves because they just can't manage to live life in the way that they hoped that they would be able to experience life with joy, with happiness, with connection. So if you're finding that you are one of these people, that you are just, you're not in a good place and you don't know what to do, the very, very best thing that you can do, my friends, of course, you can call me at 888-874-4888. And if you don't call me on the Ask Beattie Show, you certainly can reach out and find yourself a really good therapist who will help you get to the bottom of what it is, either historically or currently, that is really getting in the way of your life and your relationships. Now, having said that, sometimes depression is not just psychological and emotional and psychiatric, even though we feel that it's emotional and psychological and psychiatric. So this is where it's really, really important for all of us to have a complete physical checkup, because we want to rule out things like vitamin D deficiency, which can really play havoc with our mood. Or what about thyroid issues or low blood sugar or even dehydration or caffeine withdrawal or food intolerances? Or what about all the medication that you were taking? You know, I talk about all the time the sexual side effects of so many pills, including antidepressant medication. And I think it's really important that we all sit down with our doctor and that we request more than simply a 10-minute visit. And if you're feeling depressed or anxious, to be able to go through all of these things, including the various different medications that you may be on, because frequently medications, if they are not the cause, they certainly can contribute and trigger a variety of different emotional and psychological and psychiatric conditions. But let's say you've ruled out all of this. Now it's time, okay? So you're physically okay. You're getting enough sleep. You don't have vitamin D deficiency. But you're finding that there are a lot of issues, old issues, what I call unfinished business, skeletons in the closet, stemming from perhaps your family of origin or some history in your past, including abuse of various different kinds, sexual abuse, sexual assault, verbal abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, or even substance abuse, that there are things from your history. Now, we can't change history. And of course, I say this all the time. But what I have found, and I've been practicing now as a psychotherapist for over 35 years, I cannot even believe where the time has gone. And I love, of all the things that I do, the radio, the TV, and the writing, I think that my number one passion is doing psychotherapy. And we all have unfinished business. We all have skeletons in our closet. But trust me, there really is a way to emotionally work through what happened and what didn't happen in your historical life so that you are finally able to really be in the moment, to be able to live in the present without walking around on a daily basis where you have one foot in the past and one foot in the present, where the clouds are continually looming in your life and they are clouds from your past. And I know that there are a lot of therapists who they're saying, well, the past is the past and we really need to focus on the present. And I think, of course, it's important to focus on the present and figure out what it is that we need to do today to make our days better. And I'm all about that. I'm all about waking up every single day and hopefully the sun is going to be shining and the sky is blue and it's a new day. And this was something that my late father used to tell me all the time. It's a new day and we can move forward. However, if there had been a way to figure out how we did not need to go back and try to emotionally work through as best as we can the things in our history, the things in our past that have really impacted us as human beings, they've impacted our relationships, they've impacted our sense of self-esteem and self-confidence, I would have figured this out a very, very long time ago. But the reality is, at least in the way that I have practiced psychotherapy for all of these years, is that we do need to begin at the beginning, which doesn't mean that people cannot begin today to exercise, to eat better, and to take positive actions, constructive actions that ultimately will change their lives and their behavior and their relationships. But those old, old skeletons in the closet do need to be revisited. And it doesn't take years for all of this to happen. In fact, one of the things that I want to tell you about, which was really a game changer for me. I had a private practice in Providence, Rhode Island. And of course, all of you know that I am Canadian and I did my graduate and postgraduate work at McGill. But I lived in Providence, Rhode Island for 15 years. And I'll never forget the day because I work with a lot of couples. And they drove in from Newport. And they arrived and it was the first visit. And they said, Beatty, the traffic was terrible. Do you do long sessions, longer than an hour? Now, I know many, many therapists do 45-minute sessions, 50-minute sessions. I have absolutely no idea what can really be accomplished in 45 or 50-minute sessions, but this is not the way I work. For me, 60 minutes, that's an hour. So I said, look, I hadn't, but I was certainly willing because they had driven in and the traffic was bad and it was a hot day. And for me, that was the game changer because over the past many, many years, I actually do very, very long sessions initially in the beginning. For example, I had a man who came in from California about a year ago and he was having marital problems and he had depression issues. And he arrived at my office. I'll never forget this, at 9 o'clock in the morning. And it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I said to him, John, I mean, really, we've been at this now since 9 o'clock in the morning. Do you want to take a break? Do you want to go to the bathroom? Do you want to have a walk around the street? And he said, no, 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 no. And the process is really, really gold. You're able to fast forward things in a way that you absolutely cannot do with your 45 or with your 50-minute sessions. Now, of course, not everybody has the time. Not everybody has the finances to be able to do this, but it is a gift. It is really, really a gift to patients if they are able to spend some significant time starting at the beginning, getting comfortable with a new therapist in a new city. And it's totally amazing what can be accomplished. So I offer this to you as an option. And of course, people working with me know that this is, you know, something that I've done for so many years, and they love it. They love it because you're really able to get engaged in the process without worrying about looking at the clock. And by the time you say goodbye and you set up another appointment, that 45 or that 50 minute session, it becomes a pretty short time. So the good news is that, look, even though we cannot change our parents, we cannot change how we lived, but we can, with good therapy, emotionally work through what did and what did not happen so that we can finally really, really be living in the moment. And of course, then it's time to start to take some real constructive action. And the thing too about getting a second opinion with a therapist is that you get a new perspective. You get a new perspective on yourself. You get a new perspective on your life. You get a new perspective on your relationships. And it really does. It makes all the difference in the world. So I know I go on and on about the importance of giving yourself permission to get outside help when need be. Remember, we seek outside advice for money, for legal matters. And I think that a lot of people still believe that it is a weakness, but it is a strength. Because remember, we need each other. We need coaching. Athletes need it. Performers need it. We all need it. And we do not need to navigate this very, very complex life on our own. Now, there are a number of tips. These are daily tips that I want to give you in conjunction, of course, in getting good therapy if need be. And Gary Noel, you know, he talks about intentional ignorance and neglect. And we master what we want to master. So what I'm hoping is that you are going to master some of these really important daily tips, including having plant-based diets, fruits, vegetables, grains, fish, nuts. It's really, really important. If you go and you look at some of the studies, people who live the longest, people who are the healthiest, this is what they do. So you want to give up the French fries and you want to give up the beef and you want to do what is really in your best interest. You know, for example, people in Sardinia, they live the longest, so they eat healthily, they interact, they socialize, they get enough sleep, they take naps. So why can't we learn from societies, from cultures, from research, from people who have really, really done the work, and they have results that we can all really incorporate into our lives? And it's very, very easy. We can make all kinds of excuses why we can't exercise, why we can't eat properly. And in fact, what we end up doing is that we really sabotage, we really self-sabotage ourselves and our lives. And then we wonder why things are not going well. And talking about exercise, the studies that have been done, the results are very consistent and very clear. The importance of exercise and weight training and yoga and meditation and massage and acupuncture, these are really important things. And again, Working out at any age, even after periods of inactivity, can bring so many benefits, not just to our bodies. I know that when I was a little girl, in many, many ways, I think I was a pretty underconfident little girl, and my father was my sports coach. And I remember what he would say to me, you know, if I was feeling down, if I was feeling badly about myself, if I hadn't done well in school, he would immediately take me to the tennis courts or take me to the badminton courts, and I got all that serotonin going. And look, it's not something that everybody needs to embrace to become a professional athlete or to become somebody who is a competitive sports person. But I think that the studies are really, really clear that not only is exercise important for our physical well-being, but absolutely critical for our emotional well-being as well. And it is. It's absolutely never, never, never too late. And this is a little Harvard piece, that exercise is an all-natural treatment to fight depression. 1 in 10 adults in the United States struggle with depression, and antidepressant medications are a common way to treat the condition. And they are overprescribed in this country, that is for sure. However, pills are not the only solution, and that research shows that exercise is also a very, very effective treatment. And for some people, and listen to this, it works as well as antidepressants, although exercise alone isn't enough for someone with severe depression. But the exercise effect, it is really amazing. It starts a biological cascade of events that results in many health benefits, such as protecting against heart disease and diabetes, improving sleep, lowering blood pressure, and high intensity exercise releases the body's feel-good chemicals called endorphins, resulting in the runner's high that joggers report. But for most of us, the real value is in low-intensity exercise sustained over time. That kind of activity, it spurs the release of proteins or growth factors, which cause nerve cells to grow and make new connections. And the improvement in brain function makes you feel better. So in people who are depressed, neuroscientists have noticed that the hippocampus in the brain, that's the region that helps regulate mood, is smaller, and exercise supports nerve cell growth in the hippocampus, improving nerve cell connection, which helps relieve depression. And the studies and the results of the studies, they go on and on and on. And you can start slowly and you don't have to join a health club. And walking, especially, it's beautiful now outside, is a great way to start. And, you know, take it from me. It has really been a lifesaver in so many ways. In my own life, when I've had my own struggles. Now, what about the people in your life? And I used to ask people to take a look at the people in their life once a year. Well, now what I do is I encourage actually all of us to take a look at who are the people in our life. Are they supportive? Are they loving? Are they nice? Are they respectful of you? Because those are the kinds of people that we want in our life. Or, on the other hand, are they toxic, including sometimes friends and family? I see so many people in the practice who, in my private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton, where the families, I mean, they're really poisonous families. And my patients, they've tried in a variety of different ways to try and redesign new kinds of family relationships. But what happens? What happens if you give it your all and you put yourself out, and yet every single time that you're with certain friends or certain family members, you feel bad, you feel depressed, you feel badly about yourself. So what is the answer? In fact, I have one woman who has an incredibly toxic mom, and we talked about, okay, what to do? Does this mean that you never want to see her? Does this mean that you see her for an hour here and there? Does it mean, as one patient who I treated a number of years ago, who grew up in an extremely verbally, sexually, emotionally abusive environment, what she would do, she decided, she was a horse trainer, and she decided that she was going to try and train her mom. So what they would do was, once a month, they would go out to a restaurant. And if the mother started, if she started to be critical, if she started to be disrespectful, if she started to be miserable, the evening, the dinner was over, even before the water arrived at the table. And what happened in this particular situation is that the mother, just like my patient's horses, she learned to, in quotes, behave. Did it ever become a close and loving relationship that we would all want to have with our parents? You know, absolutely not. But this woman, she felt that she wanted to continue to try, but she was able to set the structure. And that's the thing, that we all need to set boundaries for people in our lives, and to make sure that we do not allow them to cross over certain lines and make us crazy and make us upset and make us depressed. And, you know, this is why, you know, when I talk about my book and I talk about relationships and I talk about what's really important in a relationship and in a partnership, it is communication, and it's problem solving, where you have people who are really, really willing to step up to the plate, and that they value the relationship enough that they're willing to learn the necessary skills to treat each other respectfully, even though, of course, in all good relationships, there's going to be disagreements, there's going to be arguments, there's going to be upset. But what we do not want in our lives are toxic people who have absolutely no desire to change, and that we try as best as we can to make our own changes. But if you find that there are people in your life where it's awful, it's absolutely awful being around them, then it is up to you, my friends, to make a decision to disengage. Other things that we can all do, I feel, to improve our days every single day is positive visualization. You know, sometimes, you know, we're nervous. We're nervous about a job interview. We're nervous about going to an event. We're nervous about meeting people. And it's really, really helpful to sit down very, very quietly and just visualize the situation, and visualize yourself in the situation, and seeing through the visualization that it is really going well. And it's something that athletes do a lot. I remember at one point, I was number 10 in Canada as a junior tennis player. And I remember I was having some difficulties with my serve, and I was at a tournament, and I saw a woman, one of the top female singles players from South America, and I loved watching her serve, and I wanted to make some adjustments with my own serve, and I spent hours and hours watching and visualizing the motions that she made until I was actually able to put it into action. So positive visualization, whether or not you're talking about SIRS or whether or not you're seeing yourself really, really doing well in a variety of situations, can be very, very helpful and positive to our well-being. Other things that we can do, dancing and listening to music and stopping, perhaps having some herbal tea, some aromatherapy. And what I have also found, and the studies really do support this, that helping others and giving back is so potent, because we can get so self-absorbed in our own lives and our own problems and our own worries. And yet some little gesture, whether or not it's, you know, as silly as this may sound, you know, offering somebody a seat on the bus or a seat on the subway, some little thing can really, not only is it terrific to be reaching out and helping others, but it gives us such a boost. And this is why, you know, when people talk about volunteering in a variety of different organizations, I think it gives the volunteers as much, if not more, than the people who are actually on the receiving end. And what about journaling? Maybe you're confused about some things in your life and you just need to write it down. And it can really help. It can really help center you. And it can really help you very, very much to get your feelings out in a way, especially if you don't have anybody to talk to be able to express, what are you feeling? What are your fears? What are the obstacles? What are the good things that are happening? What do you feel that you need to do? What kinds of changes do you want to make? And I think that journaling can be really, really, really helpful sometimes when we start to feel very, very stuck. Another thing that is oftentimes cited in the literature that really does help, and of course I'm totally biased, is getting a dog. I don't know what I would do without my Cha-Cha. Getting an animal, taking care of an animal, great company, a great way to meet people and socialize. You know, I see this every single day. We live on Riverside Drive in New York City, and it seems as if almost everybody has a dog. I mean, obviously that's an overstatement. And the kinds of interactions that actually go on between the owners and with the animals, you can't walk around feeling blue and sad and anxious and upset when you are outside, when you're engaging with other people, and when you are seeing all the animals having such a really, really great time together. And this is where socialization is just so, so very important. You know, support groups like 12-step programs, they really can be very, very helpful, because the importance of connection. So many people, especially people in really big cities, they're alone and they're lonely. And I always recommend, you know, get out of the house, turn off your computer. It's great about webinars. It's great about all the things that are going on online, but it's that personal connection, eye to eye, touching each other, of course, appropriately, that really, I think it really does. It makes our days, whether you go to churches or synagogues or mosques or 12-step programs, that human connection and human interaction. What I've always felt, and the studies really support this, it really does. It makes all the difference in the world. Other things that you can do to feel better, eliminating sugar and sodas and alcohol and nicotine. If you're finding that you're drinking too much and you're eating too much and you're really starting to become honest with yourself and self-aware that there is a real problem here, then of course the question is what are you going to do about it? And of course, that holds true if your relationship is in trouble, if your sex life is not going the way you would like it to go. It is all about problem solution. And I think it's so easy. It's so easy for all of us to get caught in the problem mode. And for virtually every problem, there are at least some things that we can actually do that can really change the trajectory of our lives. I mean, I talk a lot, of course, about relationships. And as we know, the divorce rate for first marriages is 48%. Second marriage is 63%. Third marriages, and people are amazed to hear this. I've been giving a couple of presentations around New York and in the Hamptons the last couple of weeks. They're amazed to hear that the divorce rate for third marriages happens to be 72%. Three women are killed every single day by their so-called intimate partners here in the United States, and four women are abused in their lifetime. I mean, four women every single day are abused in their lifetime in their so-called intimate relationships. So what does this tell us? It tells us that we have some work to do when it comes to figuring out what healthy relationships are and what healthy relationships are not. And I'll tell you, I gave a presentation at the East Hampton Library a couple of weeks ago. My program, of course, Never Make a Mistake in Love Again, Keeping Safe in a Me Too World, is based on my research and book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. So there were many, many people there. And after the presentation, a woman comes up to me and she says, "Beady," she says, "I need to talk to you. Are you going back to New York right now?" And I said, "You know, no, we can, we can spend some time." And she says, "I'm planning to be married in a couple of weeks. And after listening to your presentation, I have some real, real concerns about whether or not I should move forward with my marriage." And I said, "Look," I said, I'm available. I said, "What we could do, we could meet later on during the day, and we could sit down. And this is serious business. You're wanting to get married." And this was a woman who was probably in her, I'd say, late 50s. And I gave her my card, and she bought my book, and she was supposed to call me later that day, because I was going to be staying in East Hampton, to meet. Well, she never called. And, I was thinking to myself, okay, I think she was probably nervous. She was scared. The wedding was planned. The caterers were hired. And yet she heard some things. She heard some things that were very, very worrisome. And yet she made the decision. She made the decision to not reach out and sit down and have a consultation and go through some of her worries. And I would presume that she probably went through with her marriage. But people make choices. I mean, we make choices all the time. And, you know, one of the things when patients leave my office, I ask them to consider two things as they navigate their days. And one is to actually monitor themselves and be mindful that whatever it is they are doing is actually in their best interest, whether or not it's having that extra drink that they shouldn't be having in the first place, whether or not it is consuming huge amounts of carbs and sugars, whether or not the behaviors that they are engaging in are actually behaviors that are constructive, behaviors that are in their best interest, or behaviors behaviors that are destructive and self-destructive. Because I want people, I want us all, including myself, to be mindful about what we are doing, and are we living our lives in ways that are positive and productive, or are we getting off the path and engaging in destructive and self-destructive kinds of things? Well, this woman in East Hampton, she made a choice. She was going to ignore. She was going to ignore the red flags. And I think a lot of people, it's scary to acknowledge that there are things in our lives that are not going well. And I think it's scary. The acknowledgement is scary. And I think what is also very scary is to make decisions to actually do something differently, to make some changes. And I love this quote, a fear of knowing is a fear of doing. Because we have a lot of knowledge. We have a lot of knowledge out there about mental health, about nutrition, about vaccines, about all kinds of subjects. And yet how many people, because they fear knowing, because they also fear the doing. And we go around in circles. And this is what I see with the divorce rate. This is what I see with the domestic violence statistics. And, you know, when I go around the country and I talk about my Never Make a Mistake in Love Again program, I have really, really good news to share. I've identified, and for those of you who've been listening to the Ask Beattie Show, you've heard this. I've identified the three things that we actually need to do. Only three things. I mean, they're big things, but there are three things. And the first thing is that we have to get our acts together. We need to be in a really good place emotionally, psychologically, psychiatrically, and deal with our issues so that we are not waiting for the prince or the princess to rescue us from our loneliness and our miserable life. We need to be okay, because if we're not okay, we do not have the clarity. We are not able to see things as they really are because of our depression, our anxiety, our upset, our abuse. We're not able to really be in the moment. And as a result, people make all kinds of mistakes because they are not really okay themselves. So for all of us, and for anybody who is actually looking for a healthy relationship, the first step is that we've got to do the work so that we are really okay. And just like long sessions that I have found to be so, so helpful, if you think for one moment that you can get around doing the work on yourself so that you are okay, it is not going to happen, and you are going to continue to be very, very bitterly disappointed and wondering why the relationships are not working out well. So first of all, we need to be okay. The relationship needs to be the icing on the cake. We need to be the cake. We need to be the foundation. So that is step number one. Step number two, and this is something, especially, you know, when you look at the television shows and you read things in the media and you watch things on, you know, in movies, where do we see functional, healthy relationships? We really don't see them anywhere. So that if we want to have healthy, functional relationships, we need to figure out exactly what that means. Because I see a lot of people in my practice who are just not sure. Is it really okay that he only gets drunk a couple of times a month and then he's going to smash the door and scream? Is that okay? Well, you know, I think about a couple of patients of mine who grew up in alcoholic family backgrounds where their parents were drunk every single night and where there was violence every single day of their lives. So for people like that, having somebody in their lives who only gets drunk and who's only violent occasionally, that may sound like a huge improvement. Well, it's not. And it's not okay. So this is where getting a second opinion and a new perspective on what is and what is not a healthy relationship is something that we all need to do. So this isn't fun. It's not just about, you know, airy, fairy, easy, breezy. You know, everything in life, whether it's becoming a professional athlete or becoming a scientist or having a really great relationship, all of this really does take some work. And yet what I find oftentimes is that people would like to just bypass having to do the work and hoping for these amazing, amazing outcomes. And unfortunately, it doesn't happen. And we all will continually be very, very disappointed if we continue to hold on to that illusion. And then, of course, the third thing, I mean, first, getting ourselves together, educating ourselves about what a healthy relationship is. And number three, I mean, my book came out in 1998, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. I did the research with 450 people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut areas. And I was so proud and so happy that I was actually able to come up with some research findings that would really impact people. And thousands of people around the world have read the book and hopefully have used my formula, which is a 10-step formula that actually teaches all of us how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing to any serious relationship. And is it fun? Not necessarily, but it is something that will keep you safe. It educates. It empowers you because you know exactly what's going on. You know what's important. You're knowing that it's going to actually take some time. You're not going to find out who somebody is in a week or in 3 weeks or even in 90 days. You've got to play out the process. In fact, one of the surprise findings for me was that it takes about a year to really find out who somebody is and who somebody is not. And you really and truly cannot fast forward this particular process. And for somebody like me who is so impatient in my own personal life, I really had to pause. And yes, you have to look at things like skeletons in the closet, like verbal abuse and sexual abuse and substance abuse of various different kinds. And the only time I think that we really, really find out who people are and who they are not is when problems arise. It's so easy. It's so easy to be able to talk about where are we going to go for dinner? What kind of a vacation are we going to have? It's something very, very different when we're talking about money, when we're talking about lifestyle and religion and children and parenting and sex, when things really start to go off track. We need to know. We need to know whether the person who we think that we love, the person who we feel so connected to, has the desire and has the skill to be able to work out issues. And this is why, you know, when I was doing the media blitz immediately after the book came out, and it actually came out in a third edition a few years ago. And I have to tell you, I have a Los Angeles book agent right now who has convinced me to do a little bit of tweaking, and I'm going to be updating the book with some of the more contemporary terminology like ghosting. But the essence of my work, the essence of the book has in the research has not changed at all. But you know, I think that it's easy. It's easy. We want to fall in love. We want to feel connected. We want the happily ever after ending. And yet we have to play out the points just like we do in a tennis match in order to see the person in a variety of different ways, talking about subjects and issues that are not sexy, that are not fun. You've noticed that you don't like the way she talks to you at certain times, or you've noticed that you don't like his behavior when it comes to how he's dealing with your children, or something maybe minor but major to you. You don't like the way he dresses. You don't like the fact that he isn't showering on a regular basis. So what are you going to do? Are you going to pretend? Are you going to pretend that all is well because you don't want to rock the boat, because you don't want to be alone any longer? Or are you going to find the way? Are you going to find the words? Are you going to sit down, or are you going to say, darling, I have some things that I really want to talk to you about? And it is, it's finding the words and finding the way and finding the time to be able to communicate whatever it is that you need and want to communicate in a really constructive way. It is not about avoiding. It is not about denying. It is not about suppressing. It is not about kicking the dog or kicking the door or having too much to drink or popping pills. It is dealing head on and dealing directly with issues and problems when they arise. And I think that if more of us did that, we would certainly not continue to make the kinds of mistakes that we do in our relationships, but it would really free us up from all kinds of upset and angst and depression and anxiety. And at the same time, it would give us permission to be able to eliminate people from our lives that have nothing to give us but problems and worries and upset. I think it takes a lot of courage to be able to do this. I mean, I have a woman that I'm seeing right now, and her new boyfriend tends to drink too much. And this is a woman who's been in and out of hospital, and she's in her early 60s. And she said to me, she said, I don't think that I can live my life alone, and that I am prepared to look the other way when it comes to my new boyfriend's drinking. Well, I mean, this is a decision that she's made, certainly unsupported by me. But she's saying, I would rather live with an alcoholic. I would rather live with somebody who's putting his health at risk, who's putting our relationship at risk, than be alone. And she's in therapy with me, and we're going to have to play it out and see exactly what the consequences of this kind of a decision are going to be, for her and to her. But I think ultimately, we need to take good care. We need to take good care of ourselves. We need to educate ourselves. We need to empower ourselves with information. And we need to be willing to avoid not knowing. So again, it's the fear of knowing is a fear of doing. So we have to be willing to know and subsequently willing to do the things that are in our best interest. And it's amazing. I'm looking at the clock. I have absolutely no idea where this past hour has gone. There's so many other things that I wanted to really talk with you about, but I want to thank you all so much for listening. And I'm hoping that there is some little thing that I have said today that is going to positively impact you to do what is in your best interest. So I will talk with you next Monday live from 3 to 4 here at the Progressive Radio Network studios in very beautiful New York. And I leave you with two very, very important messages. And the first is that I want you to do whatever it is that you need to do to love yourself and to take care of yourself, and to not self-sabotage yourself as you go throughout your days.